and welcome to On the Box. We are the show that talks about all things TV related here on the Geek Show Podcast Network. I'm Andrew, and today I am joined by a gaggle of people. I have got a Rob on the side with either of you guys. Ha! Say hello, Rob.
Hello.
We've also got a Ryan.
Hello.
And a Jordan for once.
Hi. Yes, it's been a while.
While Jordan appears.
Well, apparently on a previous show, they cast me as, what was it? The Geek Show cat.
you are the cat. You come and go as you please.
You are the cat.
We has news.
Yes, Netflix is hocking the price up. Only, we're not sure if it's just in America or if it's the entire Netflix brand, but it'd be weird if it is just America and not here.
From what I've heard back when everyone used to use, like, change the IP so they can get the American version of Netflix as well, I was always told that the American one had, like, a lot more content.
It does. The American one has so much more than we get here.
Yeah.
Yeah, which so would make sense if they made the American one more expensive then.
Yeah, but the question being, right, is will they still hock the price up in the UK, right, for the amount of content that we get? And if they do mark the price up, are we going to get more stuff that America get?
It could be that the studios are also possibly, because it seems like HBO and like AMC, they're all getting like their on-demand services as well. So obviously to show certain content, they might be like, well, you can have it as well, Netflix, but we're going to charge more for it because if we could always just put it on our own thing as well. So it's sort of that.
That's what it is. I don't think many shows share Netflix and Prime. There's not many shows that do it.
I can't really name many. It'll be films, and that's about it.
Yeah. But TV shows will actually be licensed. Well, not licensed. What's the word I'm looking for? It might be licensed.
Yeah,
it is licensed. Yeah, it is licensed to stay on that particular software and not...
their platform, yeah.
Because stuff like The Walking Dead's only on Prime. Man in the High Castle's on Prime.
Yeah, I think
so. There's not. I don't
was,
think
was it Doctor Who that recent. Was it that recently went on the Netflix or Prime? I can't remember.
I know Doctor Who's been on Netflix, but I don't know if it's gone on to Prime now either. So
I feel like things like that, you can sort of it's something like Doctor Who or something. It's good to have it like as many places as possible.
Mm.
But with these like really big budget ones, I don't know. It seems like where Netflix, I think, like stood their ground is their own exclusive in-house stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe they're wanting to do more.
Yeah, I imagine that's probably part of the price rise
like,
as well.
I think they've renewed, Orange is the New Black for about...
another two series at least.
Yeah, like series, like it was going up to like something like season 7 or something like that.
Yeah.
And then obviously they've got House of Cards, which was their first attempt at it, which is still a massive success and it's currently on its 4th season, as well as many others. And obviously...
Jessica Jones has got a new... been renewed. I think Daredevil's getting renewed.
Oh yeah, Daredevil's
has been
almost definitely getting renewed.
Yeah, definitely.
So
maybe might be getting our own Punisher series. There's a lot of demand for it. But also we mentioned like the other week that they're also delving into more non-Western markets and looking at foreign language. They're doing a Spanish one, I believe.
Yeah.
And I've got a Japanese one as well, which came out last year.
Oh really?
Yeah.
That completely passed me by.
It's a exclusive Japanese one that is. A woman who works at like a prestigious like lingerie company.
Okay.
They're trying to find like all the markets they possibly can, really. But to be honest, Netflix I already think is like a pretty good price.
Because
I think the less people are paying for like TV licenses than just getting Netflix.
It's not the fact that they're marking the price up, it's the fact that they haven't announced it much. But bear in mind, Netflix has something like 17 million subscribers and they haven't announced it.
The thing is, though, is that if they wanted to put the price up, they could, no problem. I don't think it's going to affect anything with the content that they're bringing out.
No.
Yeah, I think it does seem a little bit dodgy that they haven't sent out emails or notifications or anything.
Just as an awareness that the price will be going up.
It's just
common courtesy, basically, for it.
Well, we've just got this news, so I imagine... in the next few weeks, maybe a month or so, it'll blow up and everyone will be talking about, oh, Netflix is putting its price up. And it'll cause some silly debate, but I don't think it's going to affect anything. Mm.
Well, I mean, Netflix done it last year and put the price up, apart from those who were already existing subscribers. So basically, new joinees went up to the full price, whereas normal subscribers stayed at the constant price. So
That... I mean, then this could just be like bringing the already subscribers up to that price then. Mm.
Possibly. Mm. It's just one of them things we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah.
We'll just keep ears open for this one, basically.
Cool. So, what's next?
Well, since we mentioned Japan...
Oh, Japan.
We have got news of a new upcoming Japanese TV show that was premiered at Cannes, along with a bunch of other shows that we'll get to. But first, this is Resurrection Makeover.
Tell you what?
Resurrection Makeover. So basically, they find a person who's recently, you know, lost a family member or close friend, and the show hires an actor, and they use high-tech makeup to make that actor look like the deceased person, who then visits the bereaved so that they can be, and I quote, reunited with their dead loved ones.
This sounds like a live-action version of Scooby-Doo.
Like,
yeah.
Hang on. Does this actor then live with the people?
No.
That'd be quite weird, wouldn't
it? They don't permanently become the person.
They basically just turn up and go, I'm alive again. No, I'm not. I'm just an actor. Oh, I got you, didn't I? Why is everyone crying and not laughing? Why are you all crying? This is supposed to be a happy time.
Only in Japan.
You do know what's going to happen with this, right?
Is it that Ashton Kutcher is going to burst out the bush since you've been punked?
No. Right. Japanese religion is very, very... Shintoism, Buddhism, that sort of thing, right? It gets a little bit weird, and if the actors start turning up by having their arms out like that and they're hopping, someone's going to get their head cut off. Because mm-hmm. they're going to think they're being attacked by vampires.
It's just a prank, bro.
You know that scene from Zombieland where Bill Murray basically puts on the zombie makeup?
Yes. Oh, yes.
It's going to be that. There's going to be carnage.
Yes, the amount of deaths due to mistaking people for the undead are going to skyrocket.
Yes.
It's like, I'm worried. Initially, I thought, maybe it sounds creepy, but maybe it's a little bit of a sweet thing. It's, you know, people can say, oh no, I still miss my husband. I can do this to, and it's like one last day.
Then knocks on the door and goes, surprise!
Yeah, but no, they say in like the first episode they saw that the woman was startled to see her loved one. So it's like, I think they are actually probably like not telling these people.
That's a bit.
Just get like your dead husband to go, surprise, I'm not dead. Choke, yes, he is.
It's probably some form of closure for them, maybe, but I don't know, really. Closure's probably not the best word to use.
No.
They're just getting over it, and now I'm back.
It's like reverse closure.
Yeah, reverse closure.
But anyway, this is only one of the shows that's been premiered at Cannes. So I've also found a list of 7 more.
Oh, God.
Are they all from Japan?
No, they're not. They're like from all over the world.
Any of them crazy is one of the one from Japan.
Oh, yes.
Oh, don't tease me like
so
that.
So first up, we have Migrations, which is spelled M-Y-grations by Fox International Channels. Want to be a human herd? Then apply to join the 20 men and women, including survivalist hunters and scientists, who have to follow the 6-week wildebeest migration to the Mara River in East Africa, confronting predators along the way.
Basically, do you remember the story about the American dentist that shot the lion? This is what that's going to be like.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
So Battle Royale is now a thing now? It's just the beginning.
The second one, Ants Like an Animal from Fuji Creative Corp, who are the same ones doing Resurrection Makeover. Contestants have to embrace the spirit of wild animals by solving challenges as the animal as which they are dressed.
Tapping into that furry market. It's bound to happen some point.
Well, that is that sighing like you.
Says it all, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Then we have what I think is Argentinian. Date My Avatar, which is by La Competencia /Televisia. Basically, people go on dates, but hire actors to go on the dates while they feed them lines through an earpiece.
That's Impractical Jokers, that, basically. Because Andy watches that all the time.
But Serious.
Yeah, That But Serious, it's not Impractical Jokers, it's Roxanne. You remember the old Steve Martin movie where the fireman can't talk to a beautiful woman, and Steve Martin's in the van and he's going, I was afraid of worms, Roxanne. It's like, no, words. And then he's just rambling on with your eyes, your lips, car three.
Yeah, it's exactly that. And we have A Shot at Love by Fremantle Media International, which is a lonely heart show with a twist as middle-aged virgins aim for love, with participants including apparently a belly dancer.
Exploiting. Yeah.
Now we get back into like the really slightly awkward territory with Tuvalu Media's With Love From Above. This show gives the dying a chance to give messages, and sometimes even gifts, to loved one after the present buyer has passed away. I feel like that's not the kind of thing that should be a TV show.
No.
It's like, here, we've got a heartfelt message from your dead loved one, and we're going to film the reaction right on camera.
Who comes up with this stuff, really?
People will take advantage of this in horrible, horrible ways.
Internet memes.
But like, they open the card and it's just a pop-up middle finger.
Did you just say internet memes?
Yeah. That's what's going to create
memes. No, it will, literally will. You'll just have mangled corpses everywhere.
The action show of your will.
The internet trolls will love this show.
Yeah.
We have one show left. Guess My Age by Vivendi Entertainment.
Oh, for God's sake.
Contestants must guess the age of people they've never seen before. You lose money for every year you get wrong.
What?
Stepping the bottom of the barrel.
Question being, right, is how would you like propose this to the networks?
The cosmetic surgery industry, they're the ones behind that show.
No, it's going to like cross over the Resurrection Makeover. Like the 60-year-old man is going to like tear his face off and reveal he's actually like a 23-year-old actor. And then like turn toward the audience and go, surprise, your husband's been dead all along.
Oh.
Worst thing is, you can actually think that will happen.
Yeah.
Worst thing is, I can see the prank video on YouTube.
Yes.
Yeah. That'll happen. We know it'll happen.
And the gif that'll trend Facebook, Twitter, and everything.
It'll be like the Scooby-Doo ending all over again. Anyway.
He'd have gotten away with it if it wasn't for the meddling kids.
I hope these don't make it over to the UK.
I know.
Oh, please, God, no.
Anyway.
That's where E4 steps up and takes them.
What else have we got?
Well, Rob, I believe you have a story for us.
Yes, I do. And I'm not sure how to explain this one, but Adam Carolla, right? Spike has decided they're going to do a show with Adam Carolla and the producers of Talking Dead. It's a new live series that will feature Adam Carolla and friends building stuff. And this will all be live. The television, radio, and internet personality will be taking on budding projects with celebrity friends in need of his carpentry expertise in a project that's billed as an interactive talk show meets a build show meets a live comedy show. It's basically, remember, what was it, Tool Time?
There was a show called Tool Time.
No, it was a show within a show. It was Tool Time with, what's his face, that comedian guy. He was in Jungle to Jungle and he was in Galaxy Quest. He was the captain in Galaxy Quest.
Oh, Tim Allen.
Tim Allen, yeah. He had that sitcom on...
was it Home Improvement?
Oh, Home Improvement. Yeah.
He had the show Tool Time. And it's basically that. That's what they're doing is Tool Time.
Just calling it now for the series finale.
I already want the After Hours version of it.
No, I'm calling it the series finale. Donald Trump asks him to build a wall.
That might happen. You don't know. Anyway. I'd like to know how Adam Carolla suddenly has carpentry skills.
You don't know how many IKEA flat packs he's assembled in his time.
Seven.
One. I bet it was the none.
Probably.
I bet he was the none.
No, given the amount of money he's got now, he's got people to do it for him. It's going to be like Blue Peter, isn't it? Blue Peter. Blue Peter is like the tea version. It's going to be like Blue Peter all over again. Here's one I made earlier.
What you need to get, right, is all these leftover bits and pieces to create this.
Yeah. some sticky back plastic. You know, the sticky back plastic, I still don't know what the hell that is. I know what sellotape is, but they always refer to something as sticky back plastic, and I'm like, what the hell is sticky back plastic? I went to a stationery shop asking for sticky back plastic. They didn't have it. Smiths didn't have it. Nobody has sticky back plastic.
That's just another name for sellotape.
Yeah.
That's what I thought.
Unless they're not allowed to use the word sellotape on TV.
There's actually problems on the box.
No, no. Jordan might actually be correct, because sellotape is actually a brand, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
And BBC have those strict advertising laws.
Mm.
So now I know who to blame for all that childhood trauma. Hmm. Excellent.
I can just imagine, like, tiny child robot.
I'm just trying to think of other names for sellotape.
What is sticky back plastic?
Hey?
Like, I'm just trying to think of, like, other names for sellotape that you could get away with.
I don't know.
Why didn't you just say sticky tape then? Because everyone used to call sellotape sticky tape.
I wanted...
Or just pass tape over. Anyone used to pass sellotape over.
I wanted to make Tracy Island. And they said use sticky back plastic. And I was looking for sticky back plastic.
Oh, yeah, you used tight roll.
Here comes the traumas.
See, luckily I knew the real way to build Tracy Island, which was step one, have rich parents. Step two, ask them to buy you Tracy Island.
Where was the fun in that, though? The creating side of it.
The fun was in playing with Tracy Island.
Yeah, exactly.
It always comes back to Tracy Island.
Everything starts with Tracy Island. Yeah. I'm going to hunt you down, Mr. Stickyback Plastic.
He will create Tracy Island nowadays.
Yeah, I know what it is now, so I can... you know, I've known what it is for like 10 years. It took me years to figure that out, by the way. I was a simple child.
It's just a half...
You should just make one altogether one day.
I was saying, it's just a half-built Tracy Island sat there still away.
It's actually in the loft. It's not real.
Oh, is there not just like a half-inch Tracy Island? Is the entire embodiment of young Rob's dreams?
Yes. Yes, it is. All right, okay, anyway, enough of my childhood trauma. Let's move on.
I think back to me. I have got pretty a sadder story now. So a while ago, we reported on the fact that there were plans for a Galaxy Quest TV series or maybe a sequel.
Yeah.
But it seems that Alan Rickman's death has caused Amazon to put all of that on hold for now.
Oh, yeah.
It's been a big talking point this week about that.
Mm.
Yeah, it's quite sad because apparently they'd got the entire cast together and they're pretty much ready to go with it. But now that's pretty much just all gone now.
I would rather them go ahead with it and sort of pay homage. Be the best way to do it.
The question is, if they recast the Alan Rickman role, do they have to recast everyone? Because quite a few people would have already done it because Alan Rick was on board. Which could be the difficulty of saying, so we're going to go ahead with it, but unfortunately, because of the death of Alan, we're going to have to recast that. So how many other cast members are they going to have to recast?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I could see them maybe doing it. Like, it could actually work if like, they brought on some guy who maybe... played Alan's character like one of the Galaxy Quest movies within the show.
Yeah.
And like, I think that could actually quite work if like he's the guy no one remembers. Like, I think there's definitely potential for it. And I still would like to see them go forward with a new Galaxy Quest thing.
Mm.
I think there's a lot of potential for it.
Yeah.
It's been widely sought after.
Yeah.
Well, Galaxy Quest was... I really like that film. I know it's just basically a nonsense film, but I really enjoyed it. It's one of my guilty pleasures.
I think that's
I wouldn't even call it a guilty pleasure. I think it's just... It's a fun film.
Okay. It's not on the same category as George of the Jungle. I'll give you that.
Don't say that. Don't say that.
Oh, we've got the other Rob stalking towards the microphone. He's giving Rob the glare.
Shaking his head at me disappointedly.
Like we always do.
We still need a Shane Bell.
We'll
add it in post.
He's still shaking his head at me and sighing.
So, John, you filthy liar, you said you had another story.
He's doing my job.
Yeah, we'll go with the F1 this time. Because F1 has a new host.
Yeah, F1's on Channel 4.
Channel 4.
What do you think of the coverage?
See, the thing is, they've brought three quarters of the presenting cast over from BBC.
Yeah, and they brought Chinny Chin Chin or mm-hmm. David Coulthard.
They brought DC over, Susie Wolf's over.
Yeah,
but I think the highlight of this is the fact that Murray Walker is back.
Yes,
which as soon as Channel 4 announced that, granted Steve Jones just can't handle the presenting of it. I don't think.
Which one's Steve Jones? Is he that young one?
Yeah, he's the one that always does every single Channel 4 show that as soon as he's available.
Yeah, I don't think he...
I don't think he mixes into it properly.
Well, it's not that he doesn't mix into it properly. He's just very, very wooden.
Mm.
And I was watching the end part of the Bahrain race, and just right at the end, he's asking questions of the driver who's just randomly turned up.
Mm.
And he's asking questions of the driver, and then he turns to one of the female presenters and goes, "What about you, Suze?" As if, like, that's her cue to suddenly speak because, you know, as a woman, she has to wait for the man to finish.
Mm. But I think the saving grace of this is Murray Walker.
Yeah.
Granted, we all know the connection between Susie Wolf, Lee McKenzie, and DC.
Yeah.
So they've already got that bond in there. But
my main concern with Murray Walker is that literally it's Murray Walker. That's my main concern. I mean, this is a man who, when Nigel Mansell basically had a massive crash and had a massive lump on his head, poked the lump.
Yeah.
Going, "Does that hurt now?"
Yeah.
Oh, good old days.
But the thing is, we've already got F1 on Channel 4 till 2019.
Yeah.
And then Sky have got exclusive rights to every single race.
Yeah. But it's
confirmed.
Huh? Yeah. It is confirmed, but at the moment, I think Channel 4, waiting until it gets a bit closer, will actually say, "Actually, no, we'll stump up some cash to do odd few races."
I think
the main race is going to be would be Silverstone.
I think BBC really dropped the ball when they lost the F1.
Mm.
I think that it's one of the things that
is it
BBC
ITV that used to have it.
ITV had it for a little bit, then went back to BBC.
BBC had it until about 2004.
Yeah,
and then ITV grabbed it. It went back to BBC. Now it's on the Channel 4.
Yeah,
but Sky have been trying to get hold of all of it for quite some time now anyway.
Trying to steal everything.
Mm. Well, they are, because then they can do Sky F1 channel, where they'll show nothing but
F1. Don't give them ideas, Rob.
Sky's already got an F1 channel.
Yeah.
Oh,
they've had it since they basically started splitting the F1. Because it used to be that the F1 race, one of them would be on Sky, then the next one would be on BBC, and they used to share it like that. That's why Sky launched the F1 channel.
And then
channel.
Sky started coming in with more and more, saying that we want more races, more exclusive content for it.
Let me put it this way, right? Do you know when I stopped watching football as, you know, properly, was when I discovered Sky Sports News.
Mm-hmm.
And that, all of a sudden, football had lost a lot of what made me interested in football and become this really tedious, boring thing about statistics. Really tedious and boring and all about statistics. It's like if you talk to someone who's passionate about baseball now, it's very, very boring. It's
more
all about
players.
Yeah, it's all about stats and everything like that. And Sky Sports made football into that for me.
So basically what you're saying on this part of the Geek Show podcast network is that you stopped liking football because it got too nerdy.
Yes. Yes, I am saying exactly that.
What even are we anymore?
I know guys who sit there.
He's being out-geeked.
No, I know guys who sit there and the only channel they'll have on for the majority of the day, unless Match of the Day is on, is Sky Sports News. They don't care what's happening in the rest of the world. And Sky Sports News is like every other news channel. It regurgitates the same news
stories over and over again,
unless it's like the transfer deadline.
Same with most news channels.
Well, the thing is, once there's breaking news, they'll cut away from absolutely everything, go back to breaking news, have that for about 10, 15 minutes, and then just...
No, not even flicking, that. It's like 2-3 minutes these days.
And then they just flick on to something else completely different. And then they'll always keep recapping that breaking news.
Yeah.
So,
see, my favourite bit is always like when there's been breaking news and they get someone on the scene. They go like, "So, Michael, what's been happening on the scene?" Nothing, really.
it's why I like BBC News, because it'll just be like something really serious going on and now it's time to click robots.
Do you know, the Americans absolutely adore BBC. They love BBC News because from their perspective, because of our accents here in the UK, we can take the worst thing in the world and make it sound okay. No, we can make it sound okay. Not that we make it sound better. We can make it sound reasonable. You know, it could be the apocalypse, you know, the devil could be walking the earth and, you know, biting the heads off babies. And the worst thing that could happen would be, the worst thing on BBC to happen, that is, would be that England went out of the World Cup. That would be the most devastating news on BBC.
They got bitten by a horde of zombies.
No, Argentina. Okay. It's always Argentina or Germany. You know this.
Yeah.
Anyway.
German zombies then.
Shall we take a break there?
Yeah,
I think we should.
Why not?
If you'd like comical and informative banter on the world of comics and manga, then check out 4Panel, the Geek Show's dedicated comic podcast, or Yon Paradu, if you prefer manga.
Welcome back to On The Box, and now it's time for what we've been watching. So, what have we been watching?
Stuff.
Stuff.
Yes. Weird stuff for some people, I think.
Really?
I don't know what you've been watching, so possibly.
No, I've been watching very, very normal stuff, except for... No. Actually, there is a weird one.
There we go.
Soaring over to like, oh, actually.
I'm just thankful Andy's nodding, because then we know there would have been something weird.
He would have trumped me.
He would have. And depends what your weird thing is.
No. Him and his wig would have trumped me.
Knowing Andy, it would be so normal that it's weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I can guarantee Andy'd been watching that sex box.
Oh, I've heard that.
Which is so strange and stupid. So.
Oh, don't. Leave that to one side.
Yes.
I can already see the grin on his face as he's talking about it, getting really enthusiastic about it. Oh, we miss you.
Anyway.
Come back to us, Andy.
Yes. Anyway, I will kick off. And I have been watching a show called Legend Returns, which is about Flying Scotsman.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Basically, it goes into details about the overhaul, the actual history of the locomotive, and it's run up to the final bits and pieces of painting, and it's run from King's Cross to York. And it goes into depth about the previous owners. They actually go into archive footage of the engine. It goes into archive interviews. So it goes into some proper depth of it. So they show you how they actually go through painting the locomotive, the runs that are all done prior to being released to the public, basically. So it's a decent show, but because it was on BBC,
yeah,
BBC should have went into more and more detail. Bear in mind, they only flung it out for half an hour. So it's a lot of stuff to try and throw it in half an hour.
Okay.
So BBC Four had done one before, but they'd done it for an hour and a half. So they should have got knowledge of how to do documentaries properly. And that's not me digging at the BBC at all. So, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. It's basically, that's about it. It's half an hour of that.
Is that all?
Yeah.
That's a bit of a...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you think it'd be like at least an hour.
What I was watching was like only half an hour, and it... That feels like it was only need to be half an hour, but that you feel like you could go in a lot more detail.
Well, no, it's the Flying Scotsman. You could definitely.
Yeah. The amount of stuff.
You could knock out like at least 45 minutes to an hour at the
moment. Oh, easily.
Well, the thing is, one of the documentaries that I have done before, they did go into so much more detail.
Yeah.
Because that was on for an hour and a half.
Did you say it was just a one off?
Yeah.
You probably could have actually taken the time, did like a two part, three part, and just broke it down.
Mm. But it was a one-off thing. Plus, they only had some like a month and a half to get recordings, visuals, everything, and set out.
So 6 weeks, and they had to do...
Yeah, they had to get basically the entire show.
Museum, isn't it?
Yeah. But the fact that they had to go through all the archive stuff, which BBC already have a load of anyway.
Yeah.
So they had all that. Then they could have also went into... See, because they had odd few little bits and snippets of interviews.
Yeah.
Right? Now, they could have actually had proper...
It just felt of a interview. Bit...
They rushed it.
Yeah.
So that was the main issue with it, is the fact that they have rushed it.
Okay.
Because people are massive fans of trains. It's, you know...
Well, the thing is...
It's a pinnacle, isn't it, really?
Yeah. And that's the thing.
When
as soon
say
as you
people,
say
people, do you mean Jordan?
No, people in general do.
I know.
Because you can say...
I was teasing.
You can say the name and everyone knows exactly what it is. But that was the biggest issue. It does feel rushed.
Yeah.
I mean, ITV have done one recently. with Robson Green, who does know his engineering.
Yeah.
Which is the bonus for it. So it, I haven't watched that one yet.
Yeah.
So I'll have to give that one a try.
It'd be nice to compare.
See, I imagine the ITV one will probably be better because it seems like ITV have more of a link to the north of England.
See, to me, I think ITV have put more thought into it.
Yeah.
ITV started this before BBC did and released it a few weeks after. So I think ITV have put a bit more effort into creating this.
So yeah, it's sort of like the BBC one, sort of like the light version for people that might not know, and then Robson Green ones for people that are like, oh, rich hair. That as a comparison for what I've been told, that makes more sense.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it feels like maybe a bit of the problem is BBC don't like things that are based in the north.
Yep.
Or really just like outside of London.
It could be, but when it first came back, you had ITV were there with Good Morning TV, BBC, everyone covered when it first came back. But within a matter of days, smatterings all over the place, ITV stayed with it, everywhere else stayed with it, but BBC don't. They just like, oh, now it's gone, so we'll get rid of it.
It's a national and marked out thing. Really,
yeah.
So, it's the Flying Scotsman, though.
Mm.
I mean, make the effort.
Yeah. It's either one of them things, either do it properly or don't do it at all.
Yeah.
Because we all know it's not, granted, yeah, everyone says it's the most famous locomotive in the world, which you can't really argue. But
I think the main issue with the BBC is that they try and cater for so many people, and this, a lot, many people have said that they try and cater for so many that sometimes
they lose the audience, they don't know who it's aimed at.
Like that.
To me, I don't think BBC realised who their main audience was going to be for the show. Whereas ITV have actually thought about, hang on a minute, more people will know the history of
stuff.
What
time was this aired?
It was aired twice, one on BBC 4 and one on BBC 1. Now, the BBC 1 was only in the northeast, and that was aired at 12:30.
Yeah.
So everything else that was happening at the same time, not many people would have flicked onto it.
Yeah, okay. It seems like they're just catering, just getting in on the action.
But, yeah.
Oh, it's a bit of a shame.
Hmm. Bear in mind, this is BBC, and BBC normally do things to a high standard.
Okay.
Bit late to the game.
Yes.
Okay, shall we move on then?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we can do. Because I've been watching Line of Duty on BBC Two.
Ooh.
So, Line of Duty, it's a police drama type series. Although, interestingly, to make it different from a lot of these shows, it centers around the anti-corruption wing. I think it's interesting because in a lot of TV shows, they're portrayed as being a bit scummy. You know, like, they're the guys who investigate police officers. Like, they're not particularly nice. But this show actually makes them the protagonists. So, basically, they're stopping corrupt police officers from doing bad stuff. So, this is the third series. Basically, each series follows kind of a format of, you'll get one police officer who's up to no good. They'll be played by a pretty famous star. Like, series one, you had Lenny James, who was Morgan in The Walking Dead.
Mm-hmm.
Series two, you had Keeley Hawes, who's, like, pretty damn famous on TV. Mm-hmm. And this is, you've got Daniel Mayers, who's pretty much one of those guys. Like, oh, yeah, he's that guy from That Thing.
Mm. Is it a full series with that one corrupt cop?
Yeah, it's, like, the corrupt cop. They'll be, like, the focus of each series.
Right.
And, like, each one is relatively self-contained. So this one, Danny Mays, he plays a guy called, I think, Danny Walden, who is a firearms officer. Basically, he's chasing after a suspect, and he catches him. The guy gets on his knees, and he shoots him anyway. Maybe, unless he doesn't. And okay, kind of the anti-corruption, they've got to figure out, you know, what's going on.
Mm.
Did he kill him in cold blood? And all that kind of stuff. Also, because what does connect each series is this kind of, this gang that seems to be running most of things in South London, and they've got kind of an informant on the team. So basically, that's like the subplot that's been running through each series.
Mm. Okay.
And yeah, it's just, it's
so
a
this gang's main, basically, the gang is a byproduct.
Yeah, well, the gang's kind of been sort of in the shadows.
Mm.
Like, you don't really know much about them apart from they've got like this agent on the police force, and they seem to have connections in quite a few places.
Cool.
Yeah, and just it's this really incredibly tight drama. I think episode one of this series had a bit where it's like they're interviewing Daniel Mayers. Essentially, it's just them sitting in an interview, talking to each other. But it was just like quoting police procedural manuals at each other. But it's really tense. Like, it should work because they're just like, but I think you'll find according to like section 12, article 2B. Like, it should be boring, but it's not. It's like really amazing.
Hmm. We'll have to give that a try.
Yeah. And I think, I don't want to spoil anything, but what the series has become quite known for is throwing in quite a few twists that like you don't see coming.
Mm.
And this one has got a huge one that I can't say any more about because like...
it will ruin everything.
Yeah, yeah, it absolutely blew me away. But I think the twist I do want to talk about is they've actually brought Keeley Hawes back for this series as well, with the idea being that she got arrested at the end of series two, but now she's managed to like spin this story about how maybe the police planted evidence and she's using that to kind of get a mistrial. Mm. So you got that going on as well. And just, see, it's hard to talk about the story because like there's so many spoilers involved.
Yeah.
But it's just, it's one like the tensest, most well-acted dramas I've seen on British TV like in a while.
Yeah.
I think the only reason I didn't talk about it in like the best TV shows of 2015 is because the last series was 2014.
Mm.
Like, if they had done a series in 2015, that probably would have been top of my list for best dramas because it's really good.
No.
Cool.
Rob?
My turn. So, I have a selection to choose from. And I'm just trying to debate which one I should do because...
the weird one.
Well, the weird one kind of falls into one or the other. Because I could go with Bake Off Creme de la Creme, which is pretentious as hell, and I love the fact that it's pretentious, and everyone on there is basically a stereotype. There's another one, but Ryan's going to do that one, so I'm not going to bother.
Sorry.
Yep.
I
also
you can join
it. I also I'll join in with that one. I also had a look inside Obama's White House, but that's not what I'm going for either. As crazy as those people are, the one that I'm going to go for is Natural Born Winners.
Oh no.
What?
You told me what this was this morning.
Right.
I don't think I want to hear this.
Is this just a whole new level of crazy?
No.
Yeah. Well.
Right. Natural Born Winners is a BBC series, and it's on BBC Two. They basically take four sporting heroes, and they basically have them take on some non-traditional sports or sports from around the world that we might not immediately classify as a sport for several reasons. Now, in this series, you have the Canadian 100-meter gold medalist Donovan Bailey, the Commonwealth and European champion sprinter Ewan Thomas, former Wales rugby captain Gareth Thomas, and World Superbike champion James Toseland. And these are the actual contestants. These are a group of four former world champions, European champions, you know, athletes who were at the peak of their game, led their country, that sort of thing. And they are going around the world trying different sports.
I want Gareth Thomas sumo wrestling.
What sports did they try?
Well, the next one that they're going to try is actually an Indian martial art. It's a traditional Indian martial art, and it involves swords and shields, small round bucklers, and a foil sword, but they're going to be using sticks, and they don't really hold back on that one. But that's the next episode. This previous episode involved wrestling of a certain type.
A very certain type.
No. Because Ryan mentioned sumo.
Yeah.
And sadly, it's not.
Well, I need to watch this now.
No, sadly, it's not.
Ah. Oh.
It's not
you
sumo.
You were hoping it was
don't
there,
don't tease
you?
Me like
no,
that.
No. This is the one that everybody thinks is really, really homoerotic, and I was sitting there going, why are you doing this? Gareth Thomas, you're a rugby player.
Like
but
the
then,
Roman one?
No, it's not Greco-Roman wrestling. It's Turkish oil wrestling.
Oh, it's even better. You teased me and you were playing a long game on that one.
Wow.
And
I was sitting there going, Because I was just channel hopping, and it just started, and it was like, this week the boys are trying their hands at
Oily Turkish Gareth Thomas wrestling.
Yeah, Oily Gareth Thomas. Oily Donovan Bailey, even. It's just like, what? I recognize this guy. He's a sprinter. I know him. That's Donovan Bailey. Gareth Thomas, what are you doing? They're basically in Turkey, and they're having all the traditional Turkish stuff, and they've got this huge guy, and he's got this massive pot belly, and he is like one of Turkey's national wrestling heroes, and he's training them in this Turkish oil wrestling. I was like, okay, so let's see just how very different this is to normal wrestling. And my God, is it different. Oh my God, is it different. Right. They have these leather pants that they wear, these special leather pants that they have to soak in oil and water for a day each before they can wear them, right? But they're not allowed to wear those pants until they finish their training. And in Turkish wrestling, there are like 500 plus moves in Turkish wrestling. The way to win is basically make your opponent's belly point to the sky. That's how you win. So any move you make that makes them land flat on their back, and they're basically, their belly is pointing to the sky. It's like, you know, when animals submit and they roll on the back. That's the kind of principle behind it. If you can make your opponent land on their back.
Human cow tipping.
Yes, basically. Now, some of these guys are really, really built, which doesn't help when you're watching a show like this and going, this is really homoerotic. Why am I watching?
But you can't help them turning off.
It's car crash syndrome, seriously. You sit there and you watch it. And the weird thing is, Turkish wrestling is a lot more technical than people think, because when you look at it, it really doesn't look technical. Mm-hmm. It's two oiled-up guys basically grappling. It is very, very technical. But then you find out about some of the moves. And Donovan Bailey was having this real issue with his personal space. I can kind of relate. Everyone else is going, no, I want to get in there. I'm a competitor. I'm always going to challenge. I'm always going to be in competition. Yeah. And that's like Ewan Thomas and Gareth Thomas and James Toseland. They're like that. And Donovan Bailey's going, not too comfortable with this. I may sit this one out. And
it's like, no, I'm out.
Well, one of the moves involves, right, when you've got the guy, you basically stick your hand down the back of his pants and try and flip him over like that.
That is a special move.
That's what Jackie Chan tries to do, and it just grabs him and makes
No. You stick your arm down the back of their pants. Oh. Now, you've got to remember, they are basically wearing leather pants and they are commando. So yeah, you're sticking your arm basically down their butt crack and down one leg to try and flip them. That's a move.
Why?
Now, if that was in WWE...
then it would be appealing to a whole new fan base.
Yes, it would. Lots of strange Japanese women in the front row. And, yeah, I was sitting there, I was going, okay, I can understand.
The Iron Fist.
I'm sitting there and I'm going, okay, is there any hidden cameras here? I'm glad. No, I'm sitting there, I'm going, I don't understand what this wrestling is. It actually is quite brutal in a way, because you're literally throwing people onto the ground. Mm. There's no mats or anything like that. They're just using just the ground. I mean, not like tarmac stuff, just grass and soil and stuff like that. You're throwing people down onto that. And, you know, people are getting cuts and bruises and stuff like that. And you're like, okay, I understand. And this is all a very traditional sport in Turkey. And I can understand why it's a very traditional sport in Turkey. They start off with, like, the March of Heroes, and then they basically do all sorts of other things. And, you know, they salute each other. And everyone's got this great camaraderie when they're actually, you know, before and after they've had a fight. Because it is literally a fight. But I just, it's... The oil, they walk into a supermarket and they buy these big cans of like olive oil and they have to cover themselves in olive oil. Like, I make salad with that stuff.
Makes you look at salad completely different nowadays.
Yes. I know where the feta cheese has been.
You need a lot more meat in your salad.
I don't, because their trainer, right, the big guy, he goes to the butchers, and the butchers, thing is, he's like a local hero in Turkey, and everybody knows him. Their trainer is like a local hero, and the butchers basically give him the best cuts of meat before
your
he has a match.
Are a bit greasy, I wonder why.
So, yeah, it's a massive thing in Turkey. And the nice thing was that three of them were actually, Iwan, James, and Gareth, they were really up for the challenge, even though initially they were quite uncomfortable with the whole idea of, you know, grappling with another guy while both of them are wearing what are effectively, you know, Latino short pants and being oiled up. They basically got over it really quick, and the competitive spirit came out really well. And I like the little cutaways they were doing during the show with the actual sportsmen themselves, especially the ones where Donovan was talking about his personal feelings and how he didn't feel like he was up for this challenge, but not for the reasons. I mean, it did kind of initially sound like an excuse, but then he actually went into more detail. He actually explained that some of these fights can last for 5-10 minutes, and his entire thing, being a 100-meter sprinter, is designed around his entire frame is designed around a short burst of power. He doesn't have the stamina for a 5-minute fight.
Yeah.
He simply doesn't have it. He never did have it because it wasn't part of his makeup as an athlete.
Whereas Gareth Thomas.
Well, Gareth Thomas is a rugby player.
Yeah,
he's used to getting down and dirty with them. So he was in his element. He was in his element with this. He was just good. And James Torsland, he's a tiny little fella, right? But he's a fighter. He's a scrapper. And Iwan Thomas was, they have this weird thing with the Turkish wrestling. If you're not very good, you don't get to train more. And Iwan and Donovan didn't understand the mentality behind that, but I actually got it totally, because it's the old O-level system that they used to have in this country. If you weren't good enough for like the O-levels, the actual really good O-levels, you weren't allowed to do them. You had to do like, I think it was a GCE rather than the CSE. And that was a decision that your teacher would have to make based on testing. And that's the system that they're using for this Turkish thing. If you're not good enough to actually be in competition, then you don't get to train more. If you're good enough, you get to train more. But it basically made Iwan more competitive. He wanted to train more and he wanted to practice more.
So he bettered himself to try and match everyone else.
So it worked in his case. It didn't work in Donovan's case. But yeah, it was an interesting show, and I'm actually looking forward to seeing how they fare with traditional Indian martial arts, because the little, you know, they do a little preview at the end of the episode. You could see the looks on their faces like, those are real weapons. Like, yes.
So is it fighting every single show?
It's not fighting every single show. They're just trying different sports in every single show.
I can just imagine you watching like the rest of the season just being like, needs more oil.
I'm just waiting for them to do like the Highland Games episode.
That's also fun. Covered in oil.
Tossing the cabre.
Moving on.
Everything now needs more oil.
Yeah. And now for Ryan, who needs more oil.
Oil and lacquer, maybe. Depends. Yeah, so this week I watched James May's The Reassembler.
Yes.
And mainly because they focused on, I think it was like the third out of the series. And I think it's like it's only like a three-parter, so this is the final part.
Yeah.
But I haven't really watched the others, but I've been really wanting to watch like the very last episode. And I feel like they did this on purpose because he reassembled a guitar. If you don't already know, like, I'm a massive guitar nerd. I own about 13, 14.
Geek.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a... We're all geeks about something, all right.
Yeah, Ryan, get interested in something cool like trains.
It's Rob's sports dilemma all over again.
Yes.
But, no, it's... For what the show is, like I say, James May basically has a guitar, and it's perfectly and just... so well organized and just laid out on a nice white table, all the separate little tiny little parts that go into it, and basically it's his task to just reassemble it and make sure it works by the end of it. And it's for a show, like, again, it's such a simple premise, and it's just basically him in a garage just reassembling something. In this case, the guitar took him about 6 hours, which had me a bit shocked, because obviously being a master guitar nerd myself, I was like, I could have done some of that a lot faster. But to make it a lot easier as well, that he took, it was very much like a Fender Stratish guitar, very much a Stratocaster, but this one was a Japanese brand under Tokai. But I'll get back to that later, because the thing is that the good thing about the show, again, like you've sort of mentioned, Borden, about like the Flying Scotsman show that you watched, and I was only half an hour and it skipped over some bits. This was half an hour, but I feel like what he covered, obviously, again, all that 6 hours is perfectly condensed into this half an hour slot. But I think it covered everything. It was informative, but again, it did everything that I feel like what you would have liked more in your show. But it goes into the history of, like, you know, the guitar and how it came to be. But I think the thing I liked about it the most is that, yeah, he's like sharing all these facts and the history about it, but he doesn't really go into it about like what the guitar did for like the music industry. He sort of, interestingly enough, talks about the guitar and what it means like to a generation, to an owner, to like kids at the time and like to this day. And I really like that aspect of it, but being a massive guitar nerd, I thought like, oh, he might skip over some bits. And I must admit, watching this was quite stressful for me, because there was many times where I was shouting at things, like when he was didn't really know what he was doing, really. But he's quite a smart guy, and I like this, because you, now that he's not a part of Top Gear, sort of having a show by himself, you know, he gets more of that playful banter and that very like smuggishness attitude that he has. And I liked that, and like, he can actually show off his intelligence. But again, reassembling, like, it's some, he goes into the fine details that I thought he would skip over. Like, the bit I liked the most is where he got like a replica of like a pickup magnet, and actually goes into like how it affects it and all the different copper wiring and basically the amount of detail that goes into it. And then he talks about like the truss rod, which would go into the wood of the neck to stop the wood from actually bending because of the tension of the strings. It actually really goes into detail, and I was heavily satisfied by like what he actually went into. But I pleasantly enjoyed it, and it's not really every day that you see something like this where someone actually breaks down the elements of it. But I think the little bit of trivia I got from it was the fact, because he was using a Japanese guitar, it was a Tokai, as opposed to a Fender Strat. And it also sort of glimpsed into like the history of that, the fact that back in the day where there was a lot of the old Fender guitars, and they started to make like newer models, but people didn't want the newer models, they wanted the more traditional stuff. And it was from there that you got the Japan making basically knockoff replicas, but they were actually really well made, like really spot on accurate, just obviously different name. But because I know quite a bit about guitars and like different brands and companies, like sometimes like the finest detail, like if it's too similar to the actual like Fender-esque or Gibson-esque design, then it, you know, it's a lawsuit. And it goes into the fact that Japan, you know, we're making these lawsuit guitars, and the fact when he's having like to mess around the screws, he finds that they have like Japanese screws. And I didn't realize this was a thing. Like, you obviously, you think, oh, you just use a Phillips screwdriver for like a Phillips type screw, but which Japan actually had like their own, and he like goes in detail just like just on the screw. When I thought like that aspect of it, and he needs special screwdrivers, which he actually owned. And that was a little thing that I got from it, and I like that, because funny enough, how like Japan was making these lawsuit guitars, and because it was often seen as like the cheaper place to get them as well. But looking back now, Japan is, if I personally think, is the best guitar manufacturer in the world. And so, they've gone from making these really cheap guitars, which you can still sort of get relatively cheap, but some of them like have gone massively up in price. But a modern Japanese made guitar now will set you back anything between like $2,000, maybe more. So I liked that aspect of it. But I don't know, Rob, you've said you've watched some of the other ones.
Well, I've watched this one, and I caught part of the first one, or was it the second one? I can't remember. What I like about James May is
what he, I like, what about, he's the talking about.
Well, he does, and he never really, as you said, Ryan, he never really got to show much of his intelligence and his knowledge when he was on Top Gear, because he was surrounded by two chimps.
He was always being ridiculed. He was sort of like the very much the stooge of the three.
Well, yes and no. I mean, you have Jeremy Clarkson, whose solution to mechanical problems was hit it with a hammer. And then you had Richard Hammond, whose solution to mechanical problems was find the nearest hole and crawl in it. Mm. And then you had James May, who actually tried to fix stuff. I always thought it was a little bit unfair on May that he was the subject of so much ridicule from the cool kids, let's call them, because they really weren't.
Mm. I think what we're saying is that, like, the jokes are always aimed at him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was always the whipping boy, and that never really sat well with me. I found when I was watching The Reassembler, I found that James May he's surprisingly good as a presenter, and he's got a very, very straightforward and dry wit about him, which actually sits very, very well with me. You know, I like him when he's by himself. He's done one of the best documentaries about toys that I've seen.
That was the Toy Story ones. That was brilliant.
Yeah, I feel like that had like a certain element to it as well, where you know he's actually quite enthusiastic about what he's doing, and he's putting a lot of the amount of care that he's putting into it.
Yeah, he researches this stuff. He knows what he's talking about, and that's something that he never really got to show on Top Gear. You know, one of the things that really struck me about The Reassembler, though, was his whole thing about why he's doing it, and his whole line that you don't really understand the purpose of a machine until you've built it yourself. And I love that. I think that's brilliant. Mm.
Yeah. Obviously, like, I knew a lot of the information about, like, the guitar, like, episode, but even still, I still learned a couple of little extra things. And it was more pleasant to see that, you know, they're actually going into that detail and actually getting broadcast on, like, mainstream television.
Yeah.
I just thought, you know, it's not everything you see every day. And a lot of people that guitar nerds like me were really hyped for it.
Are you going to try and make your own guitar now?
Well, it depends what it would be.
He's been thinking about that for a while anyway.
No, I've thought about it multiple times.
If you've liked what you've heard, you can find more of us all over the internet. We've got our own website, which is geekshow.co.uk.
New website.
Yes, shiny new and improved website. You can get in contact at studio@thegeekshow.co.uk. We are on Mixcloud, we're on Stitcher, we're on YouTube, we are coming soon to iTunes. Have I missed anything out?
Nope.
Excellent. And in addition to that, we are a voluntary organization, so to keep doing what we love, we rely on the help of our lovely listeners. So if you feel like donating, there is a donate link on the right-hand side of the website. Or you can click the link to go to the Geek Shop, where we have lots of lovely merchandise that you can buy.
Fantastic. Right. So, until next week then, I have been Rob.
I've been Andrew.
I've been Jordan.
And I need more oil.
We'll see you all next week.
Thanks for listening.